Welcome to the TFT Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan, and this is the show where we break down popular science into easily digestible and actionable information to give you the blueprint to be a high performer in your life. Today, I'm joined again by TFT Performance Dietitian Ryan Hassel, and we are continuing our chat about carbohydrates and answering a few of the questions that you guys submitted on the polls on our social media. There is no time like the present, so let's get to it.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We are going to be continuing on our chat all about carbohydrates and carbs, and we're going to be answering all of the questions that went through. Not all the questions, we'll probably pick the best, let's aim for 10 or so, I reckon. But I'm joined by Mr. Ryan Hassel, aka the Dojo Dietitian, one of TFD's performance dietitians. He is also part-time Mexican and recently has developed a mullet on the back of his head. Dojo, please explain to the people why you have a mullet.
It's just part of the combo. You can't really go with mustache without a mullet. So just really had to complete the set.
Yeah, I encourage everyone to, if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, move over to the YouTube, drop a comment and rate Dojo's mullet. Right now, I'm giving it about a 1.5 out of 10. It's terrible. But let's get into this. Let's talk about these carbs Q&A because we got so many questions. And like we were talking about in our last episode, carbs are a real point of confusion because they're so misunderstood. They are really, really misunderstood. And I think people, once they understand the fundamental of carbohydrate science and a little bit of the biochemistry behind it, it makes a lot more sense. It makes a lot more sense why they're not the devil, why sugar doesn't kill everyone. Why all carbohydrates are sugars. It makes everything so much easier. Dojo, you pick the first question, go through, scroll through what we've got, and let's discuss whatever first one you choose.
Well, let's just start with something easy. Like we already talked about it a little bit in the previous section, but we're like breaking down carbs, but I guess a lot of people want to kind of understand where this misconception of carbs being bad for you, where that comes from. A little bit of it comes down to what we talked about before, sort of like misunderstandings of what carbs are, thinking some are like sugars and they're bad for you, but the other ones are good, where that's not really the case. But then I think there's also a little bit that plays into it from, as you would have experienced through over time as well, like as fad diets come in, they all kind of make these like crazy claims and health claims that, oh, we have to cut like this particular food out of the diet and they'll vilify it. We've seen it with things like, like gluten and all of that stuff as well. But in particular, we've seen diets come through like the Atkins diets or like keto diets, and they really just hammer on carbs and they kind of like show like, oh, this is all the bad stuff that can happen with carbs. When in reality, it's more just like them trying to push themselves. Do you find that as well, Jordy?
Yeah, like I find that a lot of the misconceptions come from, just this misunderstanding and then people pushing a narrative, right? Like at the end of the day, a lot of the people who push, say, a ketogenic diet or the Atkins diet is the greatest example, right? Like the Atkins diet is one of the best-selling diets. Like you can't forget that Dr. Atkins is probably one of the richest doctors to walk planet Earth because of his diet, right? Like don't get me wrong, he's probably well-intentioned with it, but at the end of the day, he's selling something. And I think what the Atkins diet was originally, we've gone so far away from it, and it probably started a lot of this low carb myth because the Atkins diet did serve a purpose. Like it served a very specific medical purpose, but really we've taken that so far away. And a lot of people, when they hear low carb, and the reason they see like a lot of results and whatever is because when you lower carbs, you're ultimately lowering your calories anyway, which when we talk about weight loss, which a lot of this conversation is around, that's what ends up happening. So yeah, I think it just comes from, comes to that misunderstanding. And then you get Netflix, right? Like doing documentaries, like what's it called? The Sugar Film? Is that what it's called? That Sugar Film? Or
I haven't seen that one in particular, but I wouldn't be surprised. There's a couple of Netflix docos that we know of that sort of push the boundaries on truth for nutrition.
Like just demonstrate how ridiculous this is and how much like fear mongering goes into it. When I was a master's student, I was working at a hospital as a theater orderly. So I was working in the theaters with surgeons. I was working with this one surgeon. I won't say his name because he's like, I'm pretty sure he still practices in Brisbane. Very, very prominent, very, very smart surgeon. Very smart surgeon. I'll preface it with that. I remember he did a talk on nutrition to the whole hospital, and it was about that sugar film. And he did this whole talk about how sugar is so bad for you and you should, you know, quit this. And the whole thing, I sat there and pretty much afterwards I was like, you know what, fuck this guy. Like he's a doctor. He doesn't like there's idiots in every field, and he's not an idiot by any means in his particular field. But when it comes to this, he was just an idiot because he'd heard all of these things, and even he'd allowed himself to conform to all these biases. Like some of the red flags that he said at the start, he's like, oh, I'm really into CrossFit. One red flag, not because CrossFit's bad, but because like the person that addicts to, same with me with my ultra endurance, like it addicts a certain types of, it attracts a certain personality. Like for ultra endurance, it's an addictive personality, or you're running away from problems or whatever it is. CrossFit seems to attract like a certain type of person. So that was one. He spoke about his own weight loss journey, how he lost all this weight cutting carbs. Wasn't probably cutting carbs. It's because you just started doing CrossFit from doing absolutely nothing. And then he went on this elaborate talk about how sugar was destroying it. And I remember just sitting there and going, hey, actually, like I'm an athlete. I have lots of friends who are athletes, and we all eat loads of carbs. And to be honest, I think we're all way fitter than you and in way better shape. Like what's your reasoning here? Just the reasoning that he was using just made zero sense. And I think that's a big problem, is you get people like that in prominent spaces, or you get Netflix who make really cool looking documentaries, and then they just demonize it, and people don't understand the fundamental science behind what it is. And then they just go, oh, you know, Dr. Dickhead said this, or, you know, this Netflix documentary said this, so it must be true. It's like, well, no, it's not true. That it just goes against the science. It's not that bad. I think that is really at the root of why people have such misconceptions when it comes about carbs, is that people are just pushing these, whether it's a personal agenda, whether it's a financial agenda, they're just pushing these misconceptions to get something out of it. And then people don't question it deeper.
Yeah. And I think that anecdotal side of it kind of like pushes the idea a bit as well. Like, I don't know if you experienced this, but there was a couple of holidays when I'd come home from uni, and obviously mum would want to chat to me about nutrition stuff, and she's just tried some new like crazy diet. And I remember there was one day she'd lost a couple of kilos doing keto for like a couple of weeks, and she was like mind blown. She's, oh my God, like I'm losing weight so quickly. And like little did she know that like if she's just losing glycogen, and like this is another question that popped up, so this might answer some things for some people, but a lot of the weight loss that you see on these keto diets, like people will lose weight very quickly at the start, and then for some reason it'll just stop, and they're like, oh, why is this stopping? And like, it's mainly because they're cutting carbs out of the body, and carbs are stored with water. So a lot of that initial weight loss is actually just like water loss. They're not losing fat per se. They might be losing a little bit, but not enough to be losing like kilos within weeks. It's just going to be water that's coming out of the body as those glycogen, the carb stores in our body, are coming out. And then what happens is they like hit that wall where they've lost all the water now that was being stored. And now they're like, oh shit, my weight loss has dropped. Like I need to cut more stuff out of my diet. And then they start going into these like crazy feedback loops of like starving themselves. But I think that perpetuates heaps because people kind of talk and they're like, oh, have you tried? Like I just lost like 3 kilos doing keto for the last like month, like to their friends. And then it kind of spreads that way as well. When really like they're not kind of understanding where that's come from. I think that can kind of perpetuate these ideas as well.
I always talk about this as well, and I don't want to sound like I'm being mean or anything. And I think it's just more being realistic, is that in that instance, I always talk about like a shortcut mindset. And I find people, when it comes to their diet and it comes to health and fitness or lifestyle change or whatever, everyone's looking for a shortcut. It's just the way the human brain is programmed. Like evolutionary, it makes a lot of sense to find the most efficient way to do things and save energy for time and yada, yada, yada. That makes a lot of sense. When it comes to things like making good sustainable changes with your health, fitness, diet, whatever, all it is just intelligent work over time equals progress, and progress over a long period of time equals whatever result you're trying to get. There's no way to shortcut that. There's absolutely no way. And you hear people like, when you go back and you talk to family members or whatever, they're like, you know, I spent 4 weeks doing keto. It's like 4 weeks is nothing. 4 weeks really is not enough to make any decent like behavior change. It's not enough to make anything really effective or sustainable. You need to be thinking really long term. The reason why people are attracted to these things, because you do get, like you said, these short term gains, and it's like a dopamine hit, same as when you flick on your phone or when you do whatever, you get a text message, like a quick little dopamine hit, and then you go, oh cool, like I just lost that initial weight. And then you put that result with the action that you think caused it, which was cutting the fats or cutting the carbohydrates, and you think that A plus B equals C, when in reality, that's not how it works. Like it's like a logical fallacy where they don't understand that really you just cutting out all those carbohydrates, cut out a bunch of calories, as well as what it did was cut out a bunch of those carbohydrate foods that hold water. And that's why you got the weight loss. And you know what? You probably haven't managed your calories properly. You're probably overcompensating like everyone else does on keto. And you're eating all these like double bacon cheeseburgers or whatever without the buns, getting stacks of calories. And then once you've drained all that water out, you don't lose any weight because you don't understand like the fundamental principles, calories in, calories out. And I think that is really just a huge problem where all this controversy and misinformation comes from.
Yeah. So I guess like to answer this person's question, so one of the ones that came through is, should I cut carbs to lose weight? I guess like you can kind of guess where the answer is going to go, but what do you reckon, Jordy? Should our listeners be cutting out carbs if they're wanting to lose weight?
No, you shouldn't be cutting out carbs. Like you can cut out carbs given that you reduce your calories, because we know it's basic laws of thermodynamics, right? And I don't want to be that guy that says, oh, it's all calories in, calories out, because that doesn't do it justice of how difficult it is to actually put that into practice. But at the end of the day, when you break it down, it is calories in, calories out. Whether or not we're talking about how complex that is to actually put into action, that's a completely different thing where we've got to look at, you know, mental states, relationships with food, psychosocial health and well-being, you know, socioeconomic status, all of those things to put that into action. But at the end of the day, calories in, calories out. If cutting carbohydrates leads you to being in a calorie deficit, yeah, for sure, you can do that. But it's probably not going to be sustainable. You probably want to just slowly bring down fats, carbs, proteins, the whole thing, and keep a diet that you can actually stick to over a long period of time. Don't have to just cut carbs.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I was going to go with it. It's just like you might end up eating like slightly less carbs if you're trying to lose weight, but you won't need to cut them out completely. Like especially if you're an athlete who's training, like you're going to need some carbs. It's probably just going to be a manipulation of how much you're actually getting in.
Yeah, spot on.
Now, on the topic of that, actually, do you want to jump over to some sort of like training carb related questions? Because we got a couple in around like how to be eating carbs around training, timing, how much to be eating.
Yeah, I think we'll keep it pretty simple because you can go into a real rabbit hole with it. But there's a couple principles, especially we'll talk pre-training and we'll break it up in post-training. Pre-training, the principles you really need to be mindful of is how much can my gut physically absorb? And that's something that you need to be actively training it. It's just like going to the gym and doing bicep curls and getting stronger biceps and building those muscles. You need to do that with your gut. The thing is that a lot of people at the start won't be able to handle a lot of carbohydrates and you need to slowly increase it. The next thing you need to consider is how long is the session that you're doing? Because sessions that are say 60 minutes or less, you probably don't need to be actively putting fuel in because you already have fuel in your body, especially if it's at the end of the day. It's a bit different if you wake up in the morning after an overnight fast and you've probably got to put some fuel in to make sure. The last thing is the intensity of the session. So if you're doing a high intensity session at CrossFit, F45, you're doing wrestling, I don't know, you're doing sprints in the pool, whatever it is, it's a high intensity session. It's advantageous to have more carbs in there because your body is going to be using more carbs for that session as opposed if you go for a slow, easy jog. So beforehand, I think very, very easy rule of thumb that you can use is before your session, trying to get anywhere from 0.5 to 1 gram per kilogram of carbs before your session. And then you can just time that depending what's comfortable in your gut. Might be 30 minutes before, might be 45 minutes, might be an hour. I think if you're doing a session that is only about an hour long, then that's going to be adequate to fuel that session. Once that starts getting longer, you want to start putting in more fuel during, and we can talk about intra. The thing is as well, is that you want to be able to train your gut. And there's, like I said, actual transporters that limit the amount of carbs that you need to train to increase the amount of carbs. So you might work out 1 gram per kilo and say, if you're 100 kilos and go, I need 100 grams of carbs. And you work that out and go, shit, that's a foot long and a half of a Subway. I can't get that in. Right now, you probably couldn't get that in because your transporters in your gut will probably only be able to take about 30 grams per hour. And then you need to slowly work on building that up. That's why we say to these guys, even if you're not hungry in the morning, if you don't want to fuel before your training, start doing it so you can start building up those transporters, because we know most people can only start at about 30 grams per hour. And you can slowly build that up to 60 to 90 and even top end out. The top end we seem to think that you can absorb is about 120 grams. And if you're doing high intensity, long sessions, you do want to start hitting those numbers. So I think just as a rule of thumb, before your session, aim to get 0.5 grams to 1 gram per kilogram. Get that in. That should be enough to cover you for the first hour. If you keep going and you keep training a few hours after every hour, aim to get anywhere between 30 and 120 grams and train your gut to get to that.
And then, so moving on to post-workout carb intake, I'd say some of the key concepts there are more about like, what does the rest of your day look like, right? Like if you've just done one intense training session in the morning, but you don't really have much on for the rest of the day, the importance of timing your carbohydrates there or like really planning them out isn't as important. But if you are someone who's got multiple sessions a day, you've done an intense session in the morning, you've got another one coming up in the afternoon, that is the situation where you might need to start paying a little bit more attention to how much is going back in. So what we're trying to do in that window is basically replenish our glycogen or our body's store of glucose to be able to like to make sure that that's ready to go once we get to that next session. So some of the recommendations for this is going to be a little bit higher than what we were talking about pre-workout. So somewhere around about 0.8 to 1.2 grams per kilogram per hour over like a sort of a 4 hour window. And that's going to really help to optimize that glycogen. There's a couple of other things that can be added into the mix there to like sort of speed that process along. So that's having like a moderate amount of protein. So somewhere like 0.2 to 0.4 grams per kilogram with the carbohydrates, the two together will help to like, it basically makes it more efficient when they're being eaten together. And then also having a little bit of either caffeine or creatine or both of those substances seem to help with the process of storing glycogen as well.
Yeah, I think it's important as well. A lot of people, we've probably got this question somewhere in here, is like that post-workout window, like the anabolic window. Now, a lot of people like after a workout will just go run for their protein shake. It's not necessary in terms of protein. I know we're talking about carbs. Protein, it just matters how much you get over the totality of your day and how consistent you are getting it. When it comes to carbs, like Dojo said, it's more about seeing what you have for the rest of the day. If you wake up first thing in the morning, you bang out a 2 hour session and it's quite intense. And then you've got to go back at 3-4 PM and do another big session in the gym. It's important that you start getting those carbohydrates in ASAP. And like we spoke about on the last episode, when you're making the most of those glucose transporters that have come down to your muscles and are increasing the amount of glucose and carbs that you can get back into your muscles, make the most of that, because in that 4 hours post-training, you're going to be able to get quite a bit more carbohydrate in. So it is important in that sense. So if you've got to back up and you've got to do another training session, by all means, make a really concentrated effort as soon as you finish your session. Shower, cool down, whatever, go grab some good carby food, put some protein with it, start eating it. And then if you've got a carb back up, you've worked out, I need X amount of you know, carbs or whatever for the day, make a plan. Every 2-3 hours, we're going to eat this up. And then you pretty much redo your pre-training strategy for the afternoon session and then just repeat it over.
So did you have any other questions, Jordy, from your end?
I'm looking through here. Here's a cool one. And I think we talked about this a bit in the last episode, but we'll break it down a bit more. It's a cool one. Brown rice versus white rice, or white bread versus wholemeal. What's the difference between
them? Yeah, so this one comes down to, yeah, exactly what we were talking a little bit about before in terms of the structure of the carbohydrates. And then you kind of touched on it a little bit, is that like refining process. So when we think about like brown grain products or like whole grains versus like, you know, like white rice, white bread, the difference between the two is basically how processed they are. So these foods, especially the grains, once they're harvested, they'll get like refined, like they get broken down, basically processed. They take different parts of the grains off, like they'll take off the shell, they'll take off some of the inner layers and stuff, which gives it like a nicer appearance. Like it makes it look whiter, sometimes makes the like flours or whatever a little bit more finer, so like that makes the white breads like softer and all that kind of stuff. So like from a perspective of taste and texture, these foods are sometimes a little bit more favorable, but in that process of removing all of those layers, they take off the fiber, some of the indigestible parts, but then they also remove some of the important stuff, like some nutrients, vitamins and stuff will be removed from that process as well. And really what you're left with at the end, that white part, is the sugars, the more simple carbohydrate sugars that can then be broken down really quickly. So when we're talking about like the slow acting and fast acting, the less refined, so like the whole grains, the brown breads, brown rice, these versions of like the same, I guess the same product, are going to take longer to be broken down and used up in the body than like the white alternatives, so like white breads, white rice. And you can kind of use that to your advantage, like when you're planning out this stuff. So pre-workout, pre-session and stuff, if you've only got that short time frame, you might actually opt for the white bread toast or the white rice and that kind of stuff, versus if you've got that longer time, it might be better off aiming for the whole grains and the whole like brown breads and all that stuff, because the nutrient content might actually be a bit denser in those foods. So yeah, you kind of, there's a few, basically to summarize that, there's a few things that are removed in the refining process to make the white breads and stuff, which kind of takes a little bit away from the nutrient profile of those foods. Does that answer that question, Jordy?
Yeah, I think it gives a pretty good overview. I think just summarizing is that, like we spoke about in the first episode, you got those simple and complex carbs. And a lot of when we talk about our grains and starches, like when we're talking about rice and we're talking about bread or potatoes or whatever, when you're finding them in nature, when they've got all the skin and they've got everything in there, they have a lot of these complex carbs and they contain a lot of fiber as well. And that fiber is really, really good for our health and our gut health and everything else. But during the processing or refining process, you take a lot of that fiber out, and what you're often left with is a lot, not so much just the simple carbs, but you are left without a lot of that fiber, which, you know, like we're saying, it takes away a lot of those nutrients. Again, we're not saying that white is necessarily bad. It can serve a purpose. Like before training, it's perfect before training, because like we're saying, it can break down, it can get into our blood a lot faster. And that's great before you're going into a big intense session. It's just all context, right? So I think we covered that one pretty good. This is a cool question, Dojo. And I think we're coming towards the end, but this is a good one. We'll just wrap it up quick. What is low carb? That's a good question. Like, what classifies low carb? And this person's asked, is there grams per kilo? Is there a certain amount of grams? What do we actually classify as low carb?
There's going to be different definitions in that here. But so like, if you were going to go as low carb as like keto, most of those diets will basically limit like all carbohydrates. They might have, I think, up to maybe like 50 grams a day before like the body will kick out of ketosis and all of that kind of thing, that's going to be like a really, really low amount of carbs. But I mean, like, it depends on like your goals. So if you're looking to lose weight, you're probably going to be on like a lower carb sort of diet, but you might still have like 4 to 5 grams of carbs per day, which is like, that's still kind of a moderate amount.
Grams per kilogram, right?
Sorry, what did I say? Yeah, grams per kilogram.
Yeah, not just 4 or 5 grams. Not just per day.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Not just eating a couple of sultanas.
Yeah. So it'd be like relative to your body size. So yeah, like 4 or 5 grams of carb per kilogram of body weight per day, which will still end up being like quite a lot of carbs. It kind of depends on the definition of low carb that you're going for. What would you say for that one, Jordan?
Yeah, I think if you're talking in like a ketosis state, what it takes to go into ketosis, it can be anywhere from as low as 15 grams per day up to 50 grams, like Dojo said. I think the system we generally use in sports nutrition is we use a grams per kilogram system. So for, say, athletes that are in endurance sports and high intensity sports or highly active individuals, we tend to recommend them anywhere from 5 to 12 grams per kilogram per day to support the performance needs of their training and then their recovery needs around training. So if you do the quick math on that, 5 to 12 grams per kilogram adds up being a lot. So say for Dojo, for you, if you're 100 kilos, if you're trying to hit the top end of that, that's 1200 grams of carbs. You think that in a foot long sub, there's about 80, that's a lot of carbs, right? That's a lot of food to meet that. So everyone kind of exists on that sliding scale, depending what their intensity of training and their training volume is. When we see lower carb athletes, traditionally low carb athletes, or athletes who have to meet, you know, a certain caloric restriction in order to make weight, for example. So a lot of our combat athletes will still eat higher carb diets in relation to what they're actually dieting, like what their diet is, but they may be restricted to only having 3 to 4 grams per kilogram because they have to make weight and they can only get so many calories in per day, even though that would technically be a low carb diet in the sense of what other athletes are eating. Carbohydrates are still the highest macronutrient those guys are eating in their diet, even though that they're technically low carb because of how important it is for that training. So I guess there's a few caveats to it, but that's an important thing to remember for people who are just saying, hey, you know what, like I want to lose weight, so I want to cut carbs and lose weight. It's like, well, no, you can still lose weight and still be in a calorie deficit and still eat a high carb in the sense of what your diet is. It may not be high carb in the sense of what you and I might recommend to endurance athletes or whatever dojo, but it's still going to be high carb in the sense that you're going to be eating a lot of carbs while you're on that calorie restriction.
Yeah, exactly. Like some of these diets that might be like low carb, they're still going to be upwards of like 30-40% of the energy is going to be coming from carbs. So yeah, it really depends on your goals for what classifies a low carb diet.
This is a cool one. I think let's finish on this one. And then, you know what, we might even do another episode because we've got so many questions here that we could go over. This is another cool one. Does my macro split change depending on training intensity, i.e. do I eat less carbs on a rest day? I've got a few thoughts about this that have changed over the years, but I'd like to hear what you think, Dojo.
So this is something I've tried to look into this in terms of does it produce any differences around like from a substrate utilization, which is like probably a bit of a red hot word, but basically like does it change the way our body uses different fuel sources to do like lower intensity sessions primarily fueled by fat or like low carb days or whatever, and then maybe on like your higher intensity days having more carbs to try and push up your body's ability to use carbs in those sessions. From what I could find, like science-wise, there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence for it. But the tricky thing here is that it's also really difficult to measure that and like make that call as to like, is there a difference here? So there may be a difference, but it's not super clear yet, at least in the research, that there is a huge difference between the two. Now, from my point of view, one of the things that like it does make a clear difference is like if you're on those high intensity days, especially with like our athletes, right, like they feel a lot hungrier, like, and you'd know this yourself, like you do these intense sessions, you burn up a lot of energy, you're going to be wanting to eat more carbs on those days versus if you're doing a lower intensity day, you're just not going to have that same sort of like hunger or drive to eat heaps of food. And in that sense, you can kind of use that to play around with their intake. To like when we're dealing with clients, especially that have, as you said before, like weight requirements, like if their goals are around like weight loss and stuff, you can kind of manipulate their diet then to include a bit more food or especially like carbohydrates on those higher intensity days when they're going to be feeling like they need that like source of fuel a bit more versus like the lower intensity days where they're probably not going to be wanting it as much. And therefore like, you don't need what you like, why include it there if they're probably not going to need it as much, you know? So from a practicality side of things, in terms of just making things more comfortable with like working within the bounds, I guess, of like a calorie restriction or like some sort of a target there, you can kind of use it to manipulate the amount of food that's going in on certain days. I think from that point of view, it's definitely helpful and it's definitely useful. In terms of the energy utilization side of things, it'll be interesting to see if like they can drive more research around this. But at the moment, it's kind of like muddy water in terms of evidence there.
Yeah, my thoughts have changed a lot, like in terms of the periodizing for the work required. I think if you're doing it like a combat athlete or any other weight category athlete that has quite a lot of weight to lose, and then you need to prioritize which sessions get more calories in this limited bag of calories you have to play with, then I think absolutely then on rest days, like you just have to lower those calories so you can designate them to those higher training days just because you want to get the performance and recovery. I think for the everyday person that's just training and they're not trying to lose weight, I've changed my tone on this. I think don't think it's necessary. I don't think you should be periodizing your carbs, especially if you don't have any sport specific goals that require you to maybe get that utilization benefit or if that substrate change. And what I mean by that is that if you're not running, say, ultra endurance events or long and slow aerobic events that where you require a really efficient fat metabolism or metabolic system that's geared towards burning fat, then you probably don't need to do it. So like for a lot of our endurance athletes, we will target sessions where, okay, you can go out and you're doing this fasted in the hope that, yeah, maybe we can upregulate the beta oxidation and the fat oxidation because that will be favorable for your event. Don't worry, that's not every single session. You still want to fuel up sessions, but you're only targeting that specific session, not an entire day where you're like, yeah, you're not eating carbs today to help regulate your fat. I don't think that's a thing. And I think if you're splitting those calories and the macros more consistently throughout the week, like every day you're just hitting this target, it's a lot easier to adhere to as an athlete. Where you're periodizing things, it makes things a lot more complicated, and a lot of people don't have the nutrition literacy to actually be okay, Monday is my high training day, so I need to change all of this in my diet and make sure I increase this, and then Tuesday, you know, it's a moderate day, so I've got to do all this, and Wednesday is a low day, so I've got to change it. Yeah, it's a lot for people to take on. Whereas I think if you just have that consistent intake throughout the week, you're eating in a way that fuels your training, fuels your recovery, and then maybe you can select certain sessions where you could potentially get this metabolic advantage by maybe training in a low glycogen state or fasted, or you're getting those sessions where, okay, we're really going to carb up and work that glycolytic system. Yeah, maybe you could do that. But overall, I don't really like to change unless you're a weight category athlete, very limited calories to play with. I don't like doing the whole periodizing thing throughout. I think just for everyone, it's so much easier. Just get a consistent performance diet, eat it. Even on your rest days, just eat it. Because at the end of the day, if you're eating a maintenance calories, what's it matter? What's it matter if you eat higher or lower carbs on your rest day? Eat at your maintenance, maintain your body weight if that's a goal. And it's just so much easier to adhere to. You're going to feel so much better than making sure on those recovery days you've got enough calories to be recovering. Then on your training days, make sure you've got enough fuel to be recovering throughout the day and then putting enough fuel in around your training. So I've changed my tone on that over the years. I used to periodize it a lot, but now I just think, yeah, keep the periodizing for the people that need it. And for the rest, just stick to whatever's easiest.
I think that's a good one to leave it on. I think that's definitely a good summary as well. Thanks, Jordy. And thanks so much for having me back on.
For sure. Yeah, I think let's do a part two because I'm scrolling through these questions and there's literally like, there's so many questions here, and I think we only touched on a few there. And I think these concepts are good. And talking about this in a way that's kind of open and puts a bit more practical, so much more useful for people rather than just us saying, no, carbs are fine. Like all people being, no, carbs are really bad. That doesn't help in either camp. You do have to take a bit of time and explain this why, and listening to it and understanding will make your life so much easier, especially if you have any athletic pursuits. You need to understand this stuff to really understand how you fuel your training and your recovery. So we'll do a part two on this and we'll go through a few more of these questions. But anyway, Dojo, we'll leave that one there.
Easy. Thanks so much for your time, Jordy.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. Stay tuned for part two of our question and answer session on carbohydrate. And if there are any questions in particular that you want us to answer, then send us a message on our social media. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and if you follow along our socials at @the_fightdietitian, you can see all of the best bits from our podcast episodes. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.